Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on crime is a growth industry when we come back. Are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, your government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself. And that's because everything the government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, our Fourth Amendment protects us in our person, houses, papers, and effects, but it doesn't protect us from ourselves. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, yes, we can. And that's because information is gathered and information is stored in a very reasoned and very logical manner for later retrieval and use. And it's knowing how much information is gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. So always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you have not revealed by your own hand or by your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for our free general law CD package? It's a 4-hour program. Remember, it's entertaining, it's informative, it's educational. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about crime. Crime is a growth industry in the United States, and we get all the crime we want to buy. And every year, we buy more and more of it. If you've been wondering why crime continually grows and expands, it's because we want crime to grow and expand because it's a growth industry. It's like any other business. The people who are in that business would like to sell more of it. The people who sell crime are policemen, city councils, the FBI, government and government agencies. They sell crime in the form of regulation. They sell crime by way of fear. They instill in us a fear of crime. Then they come to us and they say, look what happened when this rapist raped this woman and brutally murdered her. All right, that's a crime. We call those violent crimes, and then they come along and they say, what we need in this country is gun control regulation. Because this rapist used a gun to capture this woman, take her out and rape her, and he shot and killed her. Therefore, the solution to rape is to take guns out of the marketplace. We're going to regulate and control them. Now, our Second Amendment to our Constitution guarantees all of us the right to keep and bear arms. I know you're on the other side. No, that's just the militia. Well, let me ask you this. What is a militia? Would you please go look up the word militia in Black's Law Dictionary? It's a citizen soldier. So the right of the citizen soldier to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Everybody is a citizen soldier, boys and girls. Now, leaving that argument aside for a moment, the government now has given us 25,000 regulatory rules and regulations concerning guns. And these are called crimes. Regulations, the violation of which is a crime. is committed by those people who violate the terms and conditions of those regulations. Now, Congress enacts these regulations to create crime because we need more business. And the business of government is to regulate and control people. That's the only purpose for government's existence. And if it's got some other purpose, could you tell me what it is? Because I don't know. Now, there is a God in heaven, and he gave us some statutes and commandments and judgments. Let me take one here. It's called prostitution. Now, the government of the United States deals with prostitution differently than the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Listen to this. The solution to whoredom from the Bible is recorded in Deuteronomy 22, verses 13 through 21. That's Deuteronomy 22, verses 13 through 21. Let's just flip over there and read about the solution to whoredom. Now, we're having a couple of conventions this year. These conventions, the Republican and Democratic convention, will attract whores like flies to a dead carcass. They'll be everywhere. So, my common sense says to me that if you've got a whore selling her goods at the Democratic National Convention, there must be some customers there to buy it. Because if there weren't any customers there to buy it, then you wouldn't be able to sell it, would you? Now, anybody that's selling anything, you know, wants to sell his product to willing customers who want to buy. Prostitutes go to those places and they frequent and inhabit those locations where customers are likely to appear. Times Square in New York is one of those locations. So, before we get into the secular modality for dealing with whoredom, let's take a look here in the scripture. Deuteronomy 22:13 says, "If any man take a wife and go into her and hate her, and then give occasion of speech against her and bring up an evil name upon her and say, 'I took this woman, and when I came into her, I found her not a maid.' Then shall the father of the damsel and her mother take and bring forth the tokens of the damsel's virginity unto the elders of the city and the gate. And the damsel's father shall say unto the elders, 'Well, I gave my daughter unto this man to wife, and he hates her. And lo, he's given occasion of speech against her, saying, I found not thy daughter a maid. And yet these are the tokens of my daughter's virginity. And they shall spread the cloth before the elders of the city, and the elders of the city shall take that man and chastise him, and they shall immerse him in 100 shekels of silver and give them unto the father of the damsel, because he has brought up an evil name upon a virgin of Israel. And she shall be his wife, and he may not put her away all of his days. But if this thing be true, and the tokens of virginity be not found for the damsel, then they shall bring out the damsel to the door of her father's house, and the men of the city shall stone her with stones, that she dies, because she's wrought folly in Israel to play the whore in her father's house. So shall you put evil away from among you." All right, so if we have somebody that's practicing whoredom, and there's a number of scriptures that deal with this thing of whores. You shall not have a sodomite, you shall not have a whore of the daughters, or a sodomite of the sons of Israel, and so on. Then you take them out and you stone them with stones. That's the death penalty. That means that you stone them until they die. You don't just throw a couple rocks at them and bruise them up a little bit. So, God evidently thought that whoredom was so bad, it was such a crime, that it needed capital punishment. Well, just recently in New York City, they had a shakedown of prostitutes in Times Square. And so what they do is they send out some men, and they solicit from these women, or vice versa. They just walk down the street, and some woman comes up to them and says, "Hey, would you like to get a little on Friday night?" And so then the cop, he's an undercover cop, he arrests this whore. But not for the purpose of taking her down and stoning her to death to eradicate whoredom from New York City. No, no, that's not the program at all. They arrest him, and they take him in, and they try him, and they fine him, and the average was $1,700 per prostitute. See, these prostitutes are business women, and they're out selling their wares. But they don't have business licenses, and so the city of New York is not collecting from them the same revenue that it collects from people, say, that have a delicatessen and they're selling lunch meat. And so the city wants to tax this business called whoredom, and so they just arrest these women and they take them in and they fine them, and then they turn them back out on the street. Now, isn't that just real special? It doesn't eradicate whoredom. It taxes it. Boys and girls, that's not the control or eradication of crime. That is the taxing of a criminal activity for the purposes of generating revenue. Nothing more, nothing less. So the officials of New York City are not interested in eradicating whores or whoredom from the streets of New York. They're interested in taxing it. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, I'm not here, you know, with a crusade against prostitution. You know, I'm not Billy Graham running around here saying that we need to eradicate evil. But my point is that the state isn't there to eradicate evil either. They're there to tax it. So if that's the case with prostitution, then in the Bible, it's pretty plain that God wants prostitutes and whores killed. And he doesn't want people practicing adultery. Well, it doesn't take us very long to start looking around at other areas of life, such as seat belts and drunk drivers and speed limits and so on, to find out, well, is the government serious about eradicating, controlling, eliminating, or reducing crime, or is government interested in taxing and making profit off of and regulating and controlling crime for business purposes? And I contend that it's the latter. That government does not exist for the purpose of eradicating rape. Our secular government isn't here because they want to eradicate people running through red lights. They want you to run through the red lights. They just want to catch you and tax you every time you run through the red light. It reminds me of a spider. There's a particular technique that spiders use. They like to have warm lunch. And so they'll catch an animal, they'll catch another insect, you know, and they'll bind it all up, you know, with its web. They don't kill it. They just come by every now and again and suck some body juices out of it. And so the victim gets a little weaker and a little weaker and a little weaker. Finally, the victim dies. I mean, if you just keep coming over and sucking the juices out of it, at some point in time it's going to die. But the spider doesn't want to just go over there and kill it, because he can't suck all the juice out of it in one sitting anyway. So he just keeps coming back and back. And finally, the victim dies, and so he throws the victim out of his web and he catches another victim. And that's what we're doing here in our society. You see, the regulations and controls keep sucking the juices out of business. Finally, the business dies. I got to tell you a little story here. I was running a company called Atlantis Manufacturing Company up in Boise, Idaho, and there was a fella came in, and he said he wanted to go to work. And I said, well, I don't need anybody right now. And I don't need anybody because the employees that I have are pretty happy and satisfied with me, and they're happy and satisfied with their employment and how much money they're making. And, you know, my employees, I had very little turnover. They stayed with me for years and years, and they were good people, and they evidently liked me, and they didn't run around and change jobs very often. And so this guy came back again and again and again. Came back probably 4 or 5 times. He was pretty persistent young fella. And he told me about his mother, and he told me about how his lifelong ambition was to become a furniture maker, and how he wanted to learn the craft and one thing and another, and I took a liking to him. And so one day I said to him, I said, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a job for you. I don't have one, but I'm going to make one. And I'm going to bring you in here so that you'll have an opportunity to learn the craft. And one of these days, somebody will quit. And when they do, why? We'll give you their job, and you can learn the furniture business. And so I hired the young fella, and he went to work there. He was a wonderful worker. I mean, this guy was to work early. He left late. He was always on time. He was punctual. He was clean cut. He was shaved and showered. And I mean, this guy was just great. I really liked him. And some time went by, and I didn't pay much attention to him, and I put him under the tutelage of my plant superintendent, and I said, this young fellow wants to learn how to work, and he wants to learn how to make furniture, and blah, blah, blah. So one day this young fellow comes up to me, been there about 3 weeks, and he announced to me that he was leaving his employment, that he was quitting, and I was really surprised. And I said, well, young man, I said, now you badgered me and badgered me, you know, for weeks to get a job here. I made a job for you. You work here for 3 weeks and then you're going to leave? And he said he was sorry and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, for one reason or another, he had to leave. I forgot what it was. And so he left. And some more time went by. And one day, I received a summons from OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and they had a bunch of violations. I mean, there was, oh, hell, there must have been 15, 20 violations of laws and rules and regulations of OSHA. Now, you know, we were pretty health and safety conscious there at the plant. I mean, we weren't running around here, you know, trying to kill our employees. And our employees hadn't complained to OSHA. That isn't where this complaint came from. This complaint came from this young man who had spent 3 weeks working here in our factory. He was an undercover agent for OSHA. Now, in law, we call this entrapment. This is where the government comes in and they're looking for crime. And they do it with an undercover agent. Now, if there's real crime going on, that's not entrapment, but this agent created crime. I'll give you a quick illustration. One day at lunch, one of the charges was is that we were running a table saw without the appropriate safety cover over the blade. Now, a table saw is used for more than just cutting boards, and one of the things you use it for is for making a thing called a dado cut. That's a notch that you put into a board for which you don't use a safety cover. And that's because the board covers the blade. In this case, it's not really a blade. It's another type of tool. But anyway, they took the safety guard off in order to put the dado cutter on. So the young man comes over, the undercover agent comes over at lunchtime to one of my employees, one of the guys that's running this saw making dado cuts, and he says, hey, I would like to take a picture of you and send it to my mother and show her what we're doing here. And so the workman said, well, okay. And so this agent of OSHA had changed the blade from a dado blade to a saw blade without putting the safety guard back on. And so they started the saw, and here's my employee putting a board through the table saw without the appropriate guard for the purposes of taking this picture so he could send it to his mother, which was a ruse so that he could create this violation, which was, by the way, worth $140 in fines. And so when I saw on discovery, as time progressed along, I asked for discovery and I got it. And when I saw the saw blade, I saw the employee putting a board through the machine without the appropriate guard. I called the employee in and I said, what's the meaning of this? Why are you down here sawing boards without the appropriate guard in place? And he told me how this wasn't a part of his regular work schedule, that he had just done this at the request of the undercover agent so he could send a picture to his mother, and it was temporarily rigged up so that he could pose for the picture. Well, you talk about a perfect crime now, huh? Well, he's got about 10 or 15 of these or so. I don't know exactly how many, but there's a bunch. And so we go into trial. This is an OSHA court, by the way. They have their own. and I raised the issue of entrapment. Now, as it turned out, I won the case, but that being set aside, it took a lot of time, effort, and energy. And the purpose behind this, and it takes a lot of money to defend these cases. And no businessman wants to dink around, you know, fighting with these phony baloney charges. Normally what you do, you take a look at it and you say, okay, I got 15 violations. And OSHA always, these administrative agencies, they always offer you a way out. Just come in, plead guilty, we'll cut the fines in half to $70 and pay them and we'll forget the whole thing. Well, let's take 15 charges, say 15 violations, times $140. That's $2,100. And so OSHA's, they're big-hearted people, you know. And they say, well, you just come in and pay us $1,100 and we'll forget. Well, hell, there wasn't any crime here to start with. There wasn't any threat to the health, safety, or welfare of any of my employees. And furthermore, not a single one of my employees was complaining. Now, OSHA was set up back in the Nixon years for an ostensibly intelligent and beneficial purpose. There are employers out there that take advantage of their employees and put them in compromising or work or dangerous work positions that they ought not to, primarily in coal mining and so on. So, you know, some good guy comes along, some do-gooder, and he says, well, what we need is an agency of government to oversee bad businessmen. And hell, the good businessmen aren't even opposed to it, because those of us that are above board and we're not threatening our employees, we're not trying to cut their arms and legs off, we don't oppose that. Now, they create this agency. And the agency goes out and they have to have rules and regulations, and so they make them up and they say, now if you are operating this saw and you don't have a guard on there, we're going to fine you $140. And that makes sense to all of us, and we sit back and we say, that's no problem. Now the agency grows and grows and grows, and there aren't enough violations out there to support the activities of the agency. You know, it's kind of like having traffic cops on the road. What if everybody obeyed all the traffic laws all the time? Well, what do you need the traffic cops for? You need the traffic cops to give tickets and to regulate those that are speeding through school zones and that are driving on the wrong side of the road and that are running red lights and threatening the rest of us with their behavior. And so somebody comes along and says, well, what we need out here is a traffic cop. So, okay, so we put a traffic cop out there, but pretty soon the traffic cop has reached the saturation point. I mean, there's only so many people that run red lights. Most of us stop. You know, there's only so many people out there that drive on the wrong side of the road or don't stop at the stop signs and so on. But that doesn't stop the law enforcement growth industry, because once the industry has been established, the natural propensity for any business is to make it grow. You know, when I was in the furniture business, I had 30 employees with aspirations of doubling the size of my operation to 60 employees and turning out twice as much furniture. So the people that are running OSHA have aspirations just like we do, and they say, gee, I'm running the agency in Boise and I've got 5 agents. I'd like to see the agency grow to 10 agents. And this has to do with promotions, and it has to do with rising in the ranks. In other words, I'm a GS-10 today and I'd like to become a GS-15. And I'd like to get more money, and I'd like to have more authority and more power. And so when government starts an operation, it doesn't reach a maximum, it doesn't reach a terminus, it doesn't get to a point where that's all we need. They have to continue to grow the operation. And if there isn't enough violations out there, we have to go create some. So businessmen are faced with then having to go hire an attorney. Now, if I went out and hired an attorney, I got to pay the lawyer at that time $4,000 to come in and defend me. But the total fines are only $2,100. Do I want to pay a lawyer $4,000 to come into the OSHA court and prove that we were innocent? Or should I just go in and make a deal, plea bargain it out, and pay him $1,000? And the answer is the latter. So all businessmen do is they go in and they pay the $1,000. Now, this comes off of the profit line, off the bottom line. So the businessman just raises his prices to cover the costs of doing business. If the power company were to raise the electric rates, then the businessman raises the price of his product to cover the increased cost of the electric rates. See how simple that is? It's no big mystery. And so you, the consumer, just pay a little bit more in the price of the product. This is inflationary. Well, that's right. Government and government regulations are inflationary. That's the bottom line. And it is because of this overregulation that business and businessmen keep adding on to the prices of their products. And then finally, they wake up one day and they say, do I really want this hassle? Because you don't have this regulation in China. See, you don't have this hassle in China, in Mexico, and other places, where nobody really cares about the health, safety, or welfare of the employees. Now, I was one that did. I used to be an employee. And I don't want my boss to put me into a compromising position that could get my fingers cut off. I appreciate the fact that the employer puts a guard on the machine so that in case I'm asleep at the switch, I don't cut my fingers off or smash my arm or cut my leg off or get hurt in some way. And so it just makes good sense. It makes good sense for the businessman, makes good sense for the employee. And if we need a regulatory agency, well, fine, so be it. Then we'll pay the costs of doing that. But you see, it always gets out of hand. It always does. Now, take a look at the FBI. They started out back in 1924, I believe it was, and had a handful of agents. And they went out and they did a good job. And the agency has grown and grown and grown until we have our own local KGB here in America. And the FBI is nowhere near big enough. They need more agents. They need more facilities. They need bigger budgets. I mean, that thing's a multi-billion dollar a year secret service agency, just like the Gestapo was in Germany. And that's because the agents who are running these agencies have a modality by which they grow their industry. Here's the way this works. The chief of police in Boise, Idaho, one day when I was living up there in Idaho, goes up before the city council and he delivers a speech to them and he says, crime grew in Boise by 5% last year, and therefore I'm coming before the council to ask for a 5% budget increase for the Boise City Police Department. And that's because since crime grew by 5% last year, we need 5% more policemen, with 5% more patrol cars, with 5% more money, so that we can combat this 5% increase in crime. Now, that makes all the sense in the world, and so the city council, they mull that over, and they say, well, that's reasonable. And then, of course, the newspaper, they cover these events, and they write up a story, and they say, well, Chief Montgomery came before the city council and asked for a 5% increase because crime increased by 5%. And so the citizens of Boise, they read the story in the paper, and it makes all the sense in the world. And so there's really little or no opposition to it. And the chief of police says, we've got the thin blue line out here protecting the citizens of the city against rapists and all kinds of other violent criminals out here. And so we as citizens say, well, God bless Chief Montgomery and God bless the policeman out here, you know, risking his life to save me from rapists and robbers and bank robbers and so on. And so we all get behind the chief of police. We approve the 5% budget increase. The chief goes out and he hires 5 more policemen and he buys another 3 or 4 police cars. And then while he's at it, he goes before the council on subsequent trips, you know, before the lawmaking body of the city. And he says, well, we need some new laws here to aid the police in enforcing these laws, we need some help. And so maybe he proposes that we have a gun control ordinance here to take guns out of the hands of the unsavory people in our society. See? and so on and on and on and on. So now we get 5% more money, 5% more police, 5% more police cars, 5% more laws. And these five new policemen go out with their five new police cars, with their five new laws, and they start enforcing these new laws. And what do you think happens? Well, at the end of the year, they take a look at the total number of crimes committed. And they discover, oh my God, crime grew by 5%. Well, of course crime grew by 5%. You got 5% more policemen that are out there looking for 5% more crime, because you got 5% more laws. And of course crime grew by 5%. So the chief of police comes back the following year and he says, well, guess what? Crime grew by 5%. So I need 5% more money, and 5% more policemen, and 5% more patrol cars, and 5% more laws. And that makes sense to everybody. And so we give him another 5% increase in his budget. And guess what happens the following year? Crime grows by 5%. Well, of course it grows by 5%. That's what we're buying. That's what we're budgeting into the process. Now, we're making crimes out of common, ordinary activities that were not crimes before. You see, it wasn't a crime to cut a board without a saw guard on it until the OSHA guy came along and made the law. It was good sense to have a saw guard on the saw. It ain't necessary to cut boards. But, you know, if you want an extra measure of safety, it's a good idea to have a guard on there so that you can't cut your fingers off. And so we make a law that says you have to have the guard on. And if you don't have the guard on, then it's a crime and we're going to fine you. Well, if we're going to fine everybody that doesn't have a guard on there, then we have to have policemen. These are called OSHA inspectors. These OSHA inspectors have to come out and search buildings. They have to get search warrants, and they have to go around and do all those things that policemen do on the streets. And so every time you create an agency, it could be OSHA, the EPA, or the IRS, or the State Tax Commission, or whatever it is, these are policemen running around looking for crimes. They're looking for violations of rules and regulations that weren't crimes until we made them into crimes. Here in America, we Americans have 2.5 million of these laws on the books. In the Bible, we only have 759 laws on the books. God can run the whole damn universe on 750 laws. Hell, if you just take a look at the IRS Title 26 tax code. Somebody said the other day that there was several million words, I forgot how many, you know, 5-10 million words, just in the tax code, for crying out loud. That's more than's in the whole Bible. There's only 744,000 words in the whole Bible, for crying out loud. You got several million words in your tax code. And all of these tax laws and tax codes over here are for the purposes of generating crimes, for the purposes of employing agents, so that they've got a reason for their existence. Boys and girls, we're turning things that are ordinary, everyday, garden variety activities, like getting in your car and driving down to the supermarket. We turn this activity into a crime because you didn't buckle your seatbelt, because you didn't have your child put into a state-approved restraint. The child doesn't have a car seat, or. Well, okay, you probably ought to have a car seat for your kid, and you probably ought to buckle your seat belt. Should we turn this into a crime and lock people up in jail and fine them, take their licenses, because they don't practice the same safety standards that you do, or that you'd like to see them practice? All right, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like all of these Law Hour programs to listen to at some future date, they're archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. And if you'd like to order one, then call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that the authors and publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to endorse and recommend the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be, don't have to be, but they may be, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, these are mine, and they're mine alone. And they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about crime is a growth industry. And so my question is, do we really want to create more crime? Is that in our best interest? There's a little more to the story, which has to do with who benefits from all of this crime. Why would we want crime? Who out there in society wants more crime? The other day came to my attention that there was a law called Megan's Law. Let me describe for you. For you people around the world, you know, that have never heard of a Megan's Law. Here's what happened. A little girl is kidnapped and then raped and brutally murdered by a pedophile. See? Now, in the Bible, there's a solution to people that commit murder. You kill them. We don't do that here in the United States, but God, years ago, he came to the conclusion that if you got some creep out here that's killing people, well, he probably needs killing himself. And so he recommended that when we find somebody that's out here killing people, that we go ahead and kill them. Now, there's another crime over here. If you've got incest, if you've got a man over here who is having sexual relations with a wife and with a daughter, a wife and a stepdaughter, a wife, and another female over here, he's having sex with both the mother and the daughter, that you take him out and stone him to death. Pretty common practice, goes on quite often. In Leviticus chapter 18, there's a number of these sex crimes, including rape, one thing and another. And so God recommended the death penalty for rape and certain forms of incest, and that was one of them. Well, there was this little girl, and she was murdered, and one thing and another. And so the parents were really distraught, and so they said what they wanted was a Megan's Law, because the guy that perpetrated this crime against their daughter was a neighbor. He just lived down the street here, a couple blocks. And come to find out, this guy was a past convicted sex offender, pedophile. And so the parents said, well, what we need is a Megan's Law. And what that is that when these perverts are released from prison, we want a law that requires them to go down and register with the police. And then we want the police to come out and to inform us that there's a pedophile that lives here on the block. Well, I guess that makes some sense if you think about it. But let me ask you this. How many of you people out there would like to live next door to a pedophile? I mean, isn't that just the kind of neighbor that you'd like to have living next door or down the block, you know, two or three houses? Well, how many of you people out there would like to have a pedophile that you have registered with the police living three doors down while your children are out here playing in the cul-de-sac? Now, I don't know about you, but I personally don't really like the idea of living next door to a pedophile, a sex pervert. And especially if I've got little kids, they just kind of make me nervous. Is this guy a reformed pedophile? Well, when we look at crime and crime statistics, most of these pedophiles do not reform. And so therefore they commit acts of child abuse isn't quite the right word. They're child abuse. It's that they attack. They're predators. There's a word there. I guess I can't quite think of it. But anyway, I think most of us would say, well, no. Well, now, why is it then here in America that we say, well, we'd like to get their name and address, and we want the police to come out? Now, there are certain rights that people have, you know, to privacy and one thing and another. We have constitutional provisions over here and so on, which prevent the police from running around just telling everybody, you know, that, hey, this guy down the street, you know, is a pervert. And so sometimes the police don't just tell everybody. They don't necessarily go out and publish it everywhere. But the police are informed, and they're watching this guy. Well, let's see. Do the police, now, do they put a guy down on the street corner 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, watching this guy's house, watching his interaction between your children and him, you know? Is that what the cops do? Well, no, they don't. Now, I'm not quite sure why it is that we Americans have become so soft on crime. On the one hand, we say, lock them up and throw away the key. And on the other hand, when God says, well, you got this pervert over here who's creating all this chaos and havoc over here, and the Bible, this is God, now recommends the death penalty, we don't want to do that because it's not too kind and it's not too gentle. So we're really soft on crime. Americans are just mushy when it comes to executing murderers, are executing pedophiles and child pornographers and so on. Crimes that God claims in the Bible are worthy of death. We don't implement the death penalty against these people. What we want to do is lock them up in jail. Now, I pointed this out the other day. On average, it costs $56 a day to keep a guy locked up in jail. We got 2 million people locked up, and we got a budget of about $41 billion a year. You know, just divide that out, and I came up with $20,500 a year. I divided that by 365 and came up with $56 a day. Now, can you explain to me why it is that you people prefer to spend $56 a day of your money locking up some guy over here that needs to be killed anyway? You know, if we got a dog running around here in the neighborhood that's taking down calves and lambs, we kill them. We shoot them. I've never seen a reformed dog yet. You know, so it could happen, I suppose. If you wanted to spend the time, effort, and energy on it, I guess you could probably reform a dog and maybe get him to kill fewer sheep and maybe get him to kill fewer lambs. But ordinarily, we just take a look at him and say, well, he's probably incorrigible. He needs to be killed, so we kill him, and that's that. Now, when it comes to humans, though, that we can have these perverts and pedophiles running around, and we don't want to put them to death. Now, this isn't a campaign for the death penalty. I just want to bring it to your attention. And so we spend a lot of money. Now, I want to tell you another story over here. I happened to be in jail one day, and as my custom was, I was conducting an interview. I like to interview prisoners while I'm in jail and see how they're faring with the authorities and with the Constitution, one thing and another, being a civil rights activist and all. And this young man, young black man, who's locked up in the Ada County Jail, I went over and I said, my name is George Gordon, and I'm a civil rights investigator, and I do interviews, and I would like to interview you if you are of a mind to. He said, well, I don't have any objections, so I interviewed him. And come to find out, just to make a long story short, he was in transit from the state prison through the county jail to the court where he was up for parole. And he had served 18 months in jail, and he had an indeterminate 5-year sentence, and he had stolen a lady's purse. He was a college student going to the university there in Boise, and he needed money, and this lady had left her purse on a chair in the auditorium. And so he saw the opportunity, snatched her purse, and ran off with it, and had $350 in it. So I asked him what he did with the money, and he paid his rent, and he paid his bills, and one thing and another. And then he was recognized, and he got caught, and so they prosecuted him. And I said, well, were you guilty? Did you actually steal the lady's purse? And he said, oh, yes, I was guilty. I stole her purse. And I said, well, did you have an attorney? He said, yes, I had the public defender. I said, did the public defender recommend that you plead guilty? No, he recommended that I plead not guilty. And we went to trial. And I said, well, how long was the trial? And he said, 3 days. I had a 3-day trial. Now, I happen to know what it costs to put on a 1-day trial in Boise, Idaho, and the answer is $1,200 a day. So a 3-day trial costs $3,600. So the taxpayers paid $3,600 for a trial at the suggestion or the recommendation of the public defender, who knew that this guy was guilty because he had confessed to the public defender that he had committed the crime. So I then did a little research and found that it cost at that time $32 a day to keep somebody locked up in the jail. So let's just take 18 months. Let's take 365, and let's take 180. And that's 545 days. Now let's take 545 times $32 a day, and it costs $17,440 to keep this guy locked up in the state penitentiary for 18 months. Now, remember, how much has this guy stolen? He stole $350. And I'm sure that the lady whose purse he stole was very indignant. And I'm sure that she was really ticked off. I would be. I mean, if you stole my wallet with $350, I'd be just mad as hell. And I'd be looking for some justice. And this lady was. And so we have a list of people here. Let me read to you. The beneficiaries of this crime. The police are beneficiaries of the crime because they now have work to do. They have a crime to investigate. This lady called the police and said, somebody stole my purse. And so they sent out an officer or two and they investigated the crime. Judges and prosecutors and jail and prison guards are all beneficiaries of this crime. After all, the judges, prosecutors, jail and prison guards and police all make their livings off of investigating crime, punishing crime, judging crime, prosecuting crime, defending crime, and guarding criminals in jail. They all make their livings doing that. Then there are the non-governmental jobs. There are lawyers, construction workers who build prisons, jails, and courthouses, and lawyers' offices, and the buildings to handle all of the other occupations in this section. There are bail bondsmen, gunsmiths, doctors, newsmen, doctors, the computer salesmen. I say doctors and doctors. There are psychiatrists and sociologists as well as medical doctors. Computer salesmen, computer programmers, computer administrators, tailors, vehicle salesmen, vehicle mechanics, vehicle manufacturers, cooks, farmers, private security firms and bodyguards, security guards, private detectives, investigators, prison and jail equipment manufacturers. I mean, I could probably write a list twice that long of people that directly or indirectly benefit from crime. And the apprehension of criminals and the punishment of criminals. And for some reason, we prefer to lock these people up and pay $32 a day. Now, this is back in about 1983 or 4, something like that, when it was $32 a day. Today, it's $56 a day. That's nationwide average. There's one prison. I tell you this. There's one prison in the federal system that costs $425,000 a year per prisoner in that facility to keep it open and operating. $425,000 per prisoner. Now that's the extreme, you know, on the high end. And then of course there's probably the Ozark County Jail. It probably doesn't cost $56 a day in the Ozark County Jail. But you know, the mainstream average across America to guard these guys, build these prisons and these beds, they have to have the money to do that. And of course they get that money from this inexhaustible source called the taxpayer. All right, now this lady, she wants justice. Now it costs $3,600 to try this guy, and well, we all knew he was guilty, but they recommended that he have a 3-day jury trial. Why do we need a 3-day jury trial over the theft of $350 and the guy has confessed to it? I mean, hell, everybody knows he stole it. All right, now, they locked him up for 5 years, indeterminate 5 years, after he'd served 18 months. Now, this kid had never been in trouble with the law before. He was a college student. He was from California, came up to Boise, Idaho to go to college. He was having financial difficulty, and he was an opportunistic purse snatcher. It wasn't even a violent crime. He didn't knock the lady down, steal her purse. He just robbed her. And so to lock this guy up cost $17,000 for the 18 months. Now, he's going to be out on the streets under supervised parole for 3.5 years. So let's take 365 times 3.5, and that's a 1,277 days. And it costs $13 a day times 13 to keep him under surveillance. That's $16,000. Now we're going to spend $17,000 to lock him up for 18 months, and then we're going to spend $16,000 to keep him under supervision for another 3.5 years. Now 17 and 16 is how much? Well, that's $33,000, isn't it? $33,000. Then the guy, it cost us $3,600, remember? So you got 33 and 3 is $36,000, $37,000. So we spent $36,000. So I, at the time, I did a little checking. And we could have sent this guy to Harvard University in a 4-year program in 1983 for $36,000. We could have sent this guy for a 4-year graduate program at Harvard in 1983 for $36,000. We're going to spend that much money dealing with this guy over 5 years because he stole a purse with $350 in it. Now, who's going to pay this $35,000 for all of this law and order and justice? Well, the lady that called the police and complained about his behavior. So this lady sentenced herself to a $35,000 fine for calling the police and complaining about his theft of her $350. Now, she doesn't pay the whole $35,000. All of us do. You and I and everybody else. And, of course, the policeman and the judge and all of these law enforcement growth industry people, they all pay their prorated share also. But I'm pointing out that they're the direct beneficiaries. The judge gets his whole salary from this process, and he pays a little bit of it back in the form of taxes. Let me ask you this. Do we really want to pay $35,000 for all of this law and order and justice over a $350 theft? Because like the businessman, if we want to be real pragmatic about it, it's really cheaper to just forget the $350 and let the thief go with the $350 so he can pay his rent and some of his other expenses than it is to catch him, arrest him, prosecute him, and punish him, because that's going to cost us $35,000. Now get this. Does this lady get her $350 back? No. No. No, the victim never gets paid 1 cent. Nothing. Now in the Bible, when we catch a thief like this, we bore a hole through his ear and sell him to the aggrieved party. Or we make him pay her back double the amount that he stole, or five times the amount that he stole. I mean, there's various punishments that God has come up with. If you catch a thief, you make him pay two, four, or five times the amount that he stole to the victim. Crime pays the victim under the Mosaic law. But under the civil law, crime pays the law enforcement growth industry. It doesn't pay the victim, and it doesn't pay the taxpayer. And when you look at the recidivism that comes from these guys, it runs around 70%. So has this guy been corrected? No. 70% of the time, he'll go right back to committing more crimes. And why is that? Well, now he's got a record. He's a convicted felon. Can he get a job as a judge, a policeman, a prosecutor, or a prison guard? No. No. What's he qualified for now? Selling drugs on the street corner and robbing people. And where did he get his education? From the state penitentiary. From who? The inmates, all the criminals, the paid professionals. I mean, you can't get a better education in crime than prison. If you think you can get a better education in crime than putting somebody in prison, would you send me a letter and tell me where? Do they have a college course on crime in your university? Hell no. The prisoners in jail are going to teach him how to kite checks, sell drugs, and rob stores. Prison, boys and girls, is college for crime. And we lock these people up in the college for crime, and then we wonder, why do they turn out to be criminals? Hell, we're getting all the crime that we can possibly buy, aren't we? And so my question is, do we really want to buy all this crime? I just thought I'd bring it to your attention and ask the question. All right, meanwhile, back on the farm, you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, our time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.